It's been almost 3 weeks since Kevin McCarthy was ousted as Speaker of the House, and Republicans in the chamber have been unable to elect a new leader despite multiple attempts. First, it was House Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana, and last week it was Jim Jordan of Ohio who failed to garner enough support to take the gavel. Tonight, House Republicans are meeting for a closed-door candidate forum to determine who will be the next to run for the speakership, with 9 representatives throwing their name in the ring. We're looking back at what's held up the race for Speaker and where the House could go from here. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the failure so far to elect a new Speaker? How do you think Republicans should proceed from here? What questions do you have about how all this works or what the House can or can't do without a Speaker in place? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@wpr.org. David Cannon is Professor Emeritus in the UW-Madison Department of Political Science. He taught courses on Congress, American government, and politics. He's the author of multiple books, including The Dysfunctional Congress, The Individual Roots of an Institutional Dilemma. David, it's good to have you back on Central Time.
Good to be with you.
Well, 2 weeks, 2 candidates, 2 dropouts. Can you walk us through why first Steve Scalise and then Jim Jordan were not able to get the support that they needed?
Well, basically, they have to be elected with a majority of the House. And so you can only lose 5 Republican votes and still be elected Speaker. And so there's a very thin margin. If you have extremists on one side of the party or even the other, it's enough to prevent them from getting majority. That's exactly what happened with both Scalise and Jordan. With Scalise, he saw the handwriting on the wall and didn't even proceed to a vote. Jordan pushed it to the floor and tried 3 different times to have a vote of the entire chamber, and his support went down on each round from 200 votes on the first round to 199 to 194. And then the most significant move is that they went to a closed session of the party caucus on Friday after that third vote and had a secret ballot. So not, you know, accountable, not knowing at all, you know, who was voting which way. And he only managed to get 86 votes when it was a secret ballot. And differing counts had 112 or 122 that voted against him. But in any event, not even a majority of the caucus when there was a secret vote. And once that happened, he withdrew as well, realizing that there was no path forward for him to become Speaker.
Now, Steve Scalise got some of the same opposition that Kevin McCarthy got from the farther right side of the party, the Freedom Caucus, and some others. Where was the opposition from Jim Jordan coming from?
It was actually kind of all over the map. There was a really nice analysis of this in the Washington Post a couple of days ago, and they broke it down to the 25 people who voted against Jim Jordan, and they really did come from different parts of the party. So some of them came from, I think there were 9 of them that came from districts that voted for Biden. And so those are the more, you know, moderate-leaning districts. There were some even from the Freedom Caucus. There were some from the what's called the Governing Caucus, people that are more interested in, say, not shutting down the government. And so it was a real mix. It wasn't as clear as the opposition to first Kevin McCarthy and then Scalise. It really was all over the map. And a few of them even who had supported Jordan on the first or second ballot voted against him on the third ballot because of the bullying tactics that Jordan was trying to use to coerce members of his own party to vote for him, including having several members come to the floor and say that they, and even their family members, their wives, received death threats from people. And Representative Bacon said that his wife was sleeping with a loaded pistol, you know, under her pillow because she was so frightened by some of the death threats that they were getting. And so there were some people who voted against him, not for ideological reasons, not for policy reasons, but for tactical reasons of just really being opposed to the methods that he was trying to use, these strong arm tactics, intimidation tactics to try to win the votes.
We're talking with David Cannon, Professor Emeritus at UW-Madison, about the race for House Speaker, where things stand and what's next. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Let's go to the phones right now. We have Chuck in Waukesha County. Hi, Chuck.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Question I have is, how can approximately 8 Congress members, representatives of the so-called Freedom Caucus, yield such clout that none of the moderates or none of the even conservative or and more liberal Republicans can't override that? I just don't understand it. They all kowtow in line like they're afraid of something. To me, that's democracy that is going down the drain real quick. So that's my question. I'll take any response off the air. Thank you.
Chuck, thanks for the call.
Well, Chuck's exactly
David, what
right.
Do you think?
They
yeah.
are afraid of something. They're afraid of the response they will get from the right wing of the party and from Trump supporters. Because we haven't mentioned Trump's influence on this yet, but he was a strong supporter of Jim Jordan. And so I think his pulling out of the race was a real blow to Trump's leadership. And the fact that you see that huge difference in support when they went to the secret ballot, where his support falls from 194 to 86, clearly shows exactly what Chuck just said, that those 108 people that changed their votes basically were afraid of putting their names out in public. But when that vote could be secret, they were indicating that there was no way they would support Jim Jordan. And so I think that people who would normally be more mainstream Republicans right now are afraid to take that position publicly because they're afraid of getting primary. They're afraid of having someone from the right run against them in the primary. So that's exactly what's happening. The second part of this question was also really important. Something I wanted to bring up was the potential role of the moderates here. And there is still a possibility that if what happens, tonight and tomorrow, so tonight they'll have the votes where they'll winnow down those 9 candidates down to their nominee. And this will happen in a sequential voting process until someone emerges with the majority. And on each round, the person with the fewest votes will be dropped off the ballot. So eventually, if it's split evenly, it'll be a head-to-head race, and it could take as many as 7 rounds to get there. But eventually, they'll have majority support for a nominee. That'll then go to the chamber for a vote tomorrow. And so if that fails, and if say Tom Emmer, who's the party whip, number 3 in the House leadership, is seen as being probably the favored candidate right now to garner majority support within the party, is probably the most likely person right now to get the nomination. But Trump does not trust him, and he's because he was one of the 2 of the 9 who actually did not vote against certifying Joe Biden's election on January 6th. The other 7 all voted against certifying Biden's election, at least in one of the states. And so automatically he becomes a suspicious candidate for Donald Trump. And so Trump has had his surrogates arguing on Fox News and elsewhere that Emmer can't be trusted. He should vote against Emmer. Well, if Emmer emerges as the nominee, you can imagine him not getting 218 votes, or 217 votes, actually, because there are 2 vacancies right now, 217 votes to become speaker. And then we'd have another deadlock. And then what happens? Well, at that point, you potentially have a role for the moderates, because what you could have is as few as 5 or 6 of the Republicans, of the more moderate Republicans, could coalesce with the Democrats and elect someone like Tom Emmer. And this is something that Hakeem Jeffries and Jim McGovern, the ranking member of the Rules Committee, have been working behind the scenes with some Republicans to try to make that happen. And so there, the moderates could play a decisive role if they decided to vote for basically the majority wishes rather than the extreme faction of their party. And it'd be a very tough vote for any Republican to do that, but it's possible we'll end up there if nothing comes out of the meeting tonight and then the round of voting starting again tomorrow.
And Representative Tom Emmer is one of the perceived frontrunners right now. in part because he's earned the endorsement of former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Here's a listen to McCarthy talking about that.
This is not a moment in time to play around with learning on the job. We need someone who understands how to do this job. I believe Tom Emmer, our whip, he's been in the room with all of our successes, from our bills to secure the border, from parents' bill of rights, from cutting $2 trillion, getting work requirements. He knows how to do the job across the street at the same time, helping us win the majority. He sets himself head and shoulders above all those others who want to run. We need to get him elected this week and move on.
I think traditionally, you know, in the Schoolhouse Rock version of how you win House Speaker, deal making and good relationships would have been, you know, enough to get it done. Is it still?
Well, no, clearly it's not. I mean, the fact that someone like Jim Jordan was even the second person they would go to, Jim Jordan is sort of the antithesis of that, that he has, you know, for his whole career been not about coalition building and, you know, trying to make winning coalitions, especially across the party aisle, but instead has been very much more about a very ideological message and obstruction in more cases than not. So no, I think you're exactly right that the rules of the game seem to have changed. On the other hand, again, that secret vote that they had shows you do have a fairly substantial majority of the Republican caucus still that doesn't want to go that route. And that's what makes me think that, you know, if the majority of Republicans can't get behind Tom Emmer, maybe they'll decide, well, let's elect Emmer, but do it with the Democrats instead. And I think that they could cut a deal that, you know, Hakeem Jeffries has publicly said what they would want is the ability to basically suspend the Hastert rule, which is not really a rule, but a norm that dates back to the speakership of Dennis Hastert, which said that a bill will not come to the floor unless it has majority support within the majority party, so within the Republican Party. And so something that has, you know, support of maybe, you know, 250, 280 people in the House, a large, you know, majority, wouldn't come to the floor if most of that support was in the Democratic Party and only a, you know, handful of Republicans supporting it. Now, that's, again, that's something that the Democrats would like to see, that norm suspended, so they can bring things to the floor, you know, with support of the Democratic Party and moderate Republicans. And that would be a big ask. I don't think Republicans would probably go along with that as a condition for electing Tom Emmer. But I think that they probably could agree to a smaller subset of demands, something like getting rid of the motion to vacate by one person, which is what Matt Gaetz did to bring down Kevin McCarthy. That was, you know, a concession that McCarthy made to get elected in the first place on the 15th ballot, and that's something that he's regretting, I think, that he did that. So getting rid of that, I think, would be condition one. The aid package to Ukraine and Israel would be another thing that should have the ability to come up for a majority vote, because that clearly has majority support in the House, maybe not majority support in the Republican Party. So they would, you know, demand that. And then promises of no government shutdowns, increasing the debt ceiling, a few other things like that. I think if they kept the wish list fairly short, you could see the Democrats getting behind Tom Emmer if he fails to get majority support from just Republicans. And they'd have to be able to cut those deals to make that happen.
We're talking to UW-Madison political science professor emeritus David Cannon about the efforts to elect a new House Speaker and what's next for Republicans. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How do you think Republicans can reach that agreement on a new House Speaker? Do you wish Democrats would get involved and cut one of those deals? What concerns you most about the House going without a speaker for an extended period of time? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kinetter. Right now, we're picking up our talk with David Cannon, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at UW-Madison. We're talking about the latest efforts to elect a new House Speaker after multiple failed attempts. Taking your calls, too, at 800-642-1234. Let us know your questions and comments about this, 800-642-1234. David, I wanted to ask you, how have Wisconsin's Republican delegation in the House been voting on this?
So they voted for Jordan. I think all the Republicans voted for Jordan on all three ballots, I believe. And then, yeah, the Scalise didn't come up for a vote. And then on the secret vote, of course, we don't know because those were not publicly indicated. And I don't believe any of them have said publicly how they voted on that secret vote.
So we have 9 candidates with their hat in the ring as of right now to become the next speaker. Representative Mike Flood of Nebraska is circulating a so-called unity pledge. Can you tell us what this is all about?
Yeah, the unity pledge is basically the idea that you will support whoever the nominee ends up being, and you'll pledge that ahead of time before these votes even happen. And so far, there has been quite a bit of resistance to that, especially from the Freedom Caucus members, who I think some who maybe do have suspicions about Tom Emmer's support for Donald Trump, for example, wouldn't want to commit to voting for Tom Emmer if he ends up being the nominee. So I don't think that is going to gain traction. At least I doubt that it's going to be a binding kind of rule that they impose on the all Republican members. I would be surprised if they did that.
One other traction check, the idea of giving temporary speaker Patrick McHenry more powers, the ability to pass legislation on the floor. Any momentum there?
Yeah, that's still kind of on the back burner. So that one they actually did bring up. That came up before this secret vote was taken on Friday that gave the signal to Jim Jordan that he was finished. And Jordan had at least some of his supporters said that he was on board with that idea initially as a way to try to buy him more time to garner the support he needed to become speaker. And there was talk of even giving these additional powers to Patrick McHenry through January. And then Jordan later said, no, he wasn't on board with that. And that then was also shot down before the secret vote was taken on Friday. So that one still could be a fallback. Let's say things crash and burn tomorrow. No one of the 9 ends up getting 217 votes and we still don't have a speaker. That could be a fallback instead of this bipartisan possibility of working with the Democrats. And one last point on that possibility, just so your listeners know that this is not some crazy thing that's never been done. It's true, it's never been done in the U.S. House of Representatives, but it's happened in state legislatures 22 times since 1994, including this year in Ohio and Pennsylvania in their House of Representatives, and in Alaska in both their House and Senate. They elected their leadership, the speaker, with a bipartisan vote. And in some cases, historically, they even elected the speaker or majority leader of the Senate from the minority party. It even happened in a few cases. Now, that's even more unusual. That'd be like Hakeem Jeffries becoming speaker. That clearly is not going to happen here in this instance. I think there is the precedent for that, at least at the state level. And so I think that still is another backup plan. But the expanding the powers of the acting speaker, Patrick Henry, is definitely another possibility if things don't pan out tomorrow.
In terms of congressional business, you mentioned aid for Ukraine, an aid package related to the Israel-Hamas war. Also, a government spending stopgap bill is going to run out on November 17th. What are the stakes? What's going to happen if we get to that point without something else in place?
Right. No, absolutely. The government shutdown again on November 17th is another real deadline that is approaching. The Senate continues to work on its appropriations bills and trying to move the process along. But without the House being able to do anything, if we don't have a resolution by mid-November, we'll be back to shutting down the government. And so I can't imagine this will drag on till then. I mean, as dysfunctional as things have been in the House, I can't imagine we wouldn't have a speaker by the middle of November. So that is another point of urgency, though, to move things along, is that we really do need to have the House able to operate, hopefully well before then, because the situation clearly in Ukraine and the Mideast is getting more dire by the day.
And whether this wraps up in a few days, a week, a few months, do you expect to see this becoming a campaign issue or affecting the political fortunes of Republicans in their next elections?
Well, yes, clearly this is something that right now Republicans in those swing districts are very worried about, especially a lot of those New York Republicans who were elected in Biden districts. They've been some of the more outspoken on the need to get this done and not to have this hang over the House of Representatives any longer. So, yes, I think this is the political fallout from this. You know, it's not going to be huge because, you know, most Republicans are in pretty safe districts. But those Republicans that are in swing districts, especially, again, I think there are about 17 who were elected from districts that Joe Biden carried. You know, they are worried about this. And Democrats are using this right now to their political advantage and fundraising appeals. They're mentioning the dysfunction of the House. So this is something I think is clearly in the interest of the Republican Party to try to wrap this up and to get a speaker elected.
And in that next speakership, you mentioned the idea of getting rid of the motion to vacate that ousted Kevin McCarthy. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell in the Senate has backed that idea of getting rid of it. Do you think we might move in that direction in the future?
Yes. So maybe not getting rid of it entirely, but at least increasing the number needed to bring that motion up for a vote. Because, again, what the Freedom Caucus bargained for with Kevin McCarthy when he was first elected was to have a single member be able to do that. I think if you would raise that to even, 10%, maybe 25% of the caucus, that would be enough of a hurdle that this would be much more difficult. So in this case, you know, Kevin McCarthy would still be speaker. If they had that 10% threshold, he would still be speaker. And so that, I think, is something that should be restored for sure, because we don't need this kind of chaos. And if we're going to continue to be in these political situations with tight margins, what it looks like we're going to be for probably the next several election cycles, that having that kind of power in the hands of such a few extremists really does not serve the interests of either party.
Well, David, thanks for joining us and getting us up to speed.
Good to be with you. Thanks a lot.
David Cannon is Professor Emeritus at the UW-Madison Department of Political Science. He was with us today to look at the ongoing attempts by House Republicans to elect a new speaker and where the race could go from here.